John's Gospel, chapter 6. Jesus went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias, and a multitude followed him because they saw the signs which he did on those who were diseased. Jesus went up into the hills and there sat down with his disciples. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was at hand. Lifting up his eyes then and seeing that a multitude was coming to him, Jesus said to Philip, "How are we to buy bread so that these people may eat?" This he said to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii would not buy enough bread for each of them to get a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There's a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they among so many?" Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." And the story goes on from there, and you know that Jesus feeds the 5,000. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm beginning to think that maybe these doomsday folks that we heard about a month or two ago have a point when the continued prayers for rain are answered, seemingly, by yet another wildfire. And if the heat and the threat of destruction are not bad enough, seemingly our politicians in Washington are playing a game of economic chicken right over the top of the first domino, where if they tip it over, the entire world's economy is about to collapse. Intractable and frightening circumstances. The parable of, or the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 is the only miracle story in the New Testament that appears in all 4 Gospels, suggesting that the point of which might be vaguely important. It's an intractable situation, and yet, Jesus finds a way. How does that happen? Well, he simply says to his disciples, "Make the people sit down." Maybe that's the point. When the situation seems intractable, when hope seems scarce, take a seat and see what happens. Take a seat. I've been thinking about that. How might we find emerging from, and to meet our worries, hope, by sitting down? Sit down, take a seat, first of all, perhaps, with the enemy. Take a seat with the enemy and find within it some hope. There are very few people in my life that I actively dislike. Unfortunately, I work with one of them. He spends a lot of his time doing research overseas, and the more of the year that there's at least one ocean between us, the better I like it. A few years ago, that open dislike became active hostility. It was kind of ugly, and I started it. And shortly thereafter, I said, "You know, let's just go get some lunch. I'm sick of being mad." And I would like to tell you that in the aftermath of that lunch, everything is tickety-boo and we like each other, but we don't. But open hostility has at least given way to wary tolerance, tolerable wariness. And that's better. That's an improvement. Because we took a seat and we sat down, the thing coming out of Washington now that gives me any hope at all is at least the two sides are sitting down and talking. When that stops, I start to get more nervous. As long as they're sitting down, as long as they're talking, there's at least some hope for wary tolerance or tolerable wariness, or at least a step forward to some workable compromise. For the rest of us, I think it's an interesting message. When hope seems elusive, take a seat. Maybe even take a seat with the enemy. On the other side of the coin, and this we can always do, take a seat with someone who loves you. And everybody has someone, typically more than one in their lives, for whom that is true, that loves you not if or conditionally, but loves you mostly anyway. When I was a kid, the person in my life for whom that was most true was my grandmother. And what I remember most about simply being in the same room with her, or having any kind of contact or encounter, whether it be playing a card game or playing golf or some such thing, was that I knew that someone who loved me was giving me undivided attention. There's nothing more healing or hopeful than the undivided attention of someone who loves you. Now, you don't have to contrive this. I mean, we have dinner together with the TV on as often as not. You don't have to say, okay, tonight we're having undivided attention. But there are people in your life in whose presence, whether you're overtly doing or saying or communicating anything at all in particular, the fact that they're there with you calms your fears. Take a seat in the company of one who loves you. Because even if the next fire takes your house, or a tornado knocks it over, and these days we'd even trade that for the rain it brings, even if your retirement portfolio takes a hit or disappears, that person in your life who loves you today will love you then. And that's an amazing gift. Take a seat. Give and share undivided attention with someone who loves you. And finally, I think take a seat. This sounds sort of odd. Take a seat, you, with you. There's something healing and occasionally even magical in solitude. When I take a seat with myself in the recliner, I often as not fall asleep for about 20 minutes. You know what? That's nice time. A 20-minute nap will refresh and renew me and make the world look a little bit brighter. 20 or so years ago, the latest, greatest at the time, pop psychology thing was a movement called neuro-linguistic programming, the point of which was to put an individual in touch with emotional resources they always have but don't think about very much. And one of the tricks of this particular mode of emotional strength was called anchoring. And the idea was to find a place by yourself of quiet solitude and bring back to memory a time in your life where you felt especially strong, especially healthy, especially loved, whatever it was, a moment in time. And with eyes closed, replay the moment with as much detail as you can. What did it look like? What did it feel like? What did it smell like? What colors come to mind? Replay the moment in all of its detail, and at the same time, touch an object. Touch an object. A ring, a rock, a coin. Didn't matter. And the theory is that if you bring all of those emotional feelings together with the touch of an object, the next time you're feeling distressed, you can simply touch the object and the emotions come back and you find healing and strength. Oddly enough, it does work. But the point is this: it comes out of spending time taking a seat, you with you. The miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 is referred to as the multiplication of loaves. It's a sort of technical theology book title to that story. I would suggest that in difficult times, times of uncertainty or stress, the point of the multiplication of loaves is simply this: take a seat, and you find perhaps a multiplication of hope. Take a seat with the enemy, with someone who loves you very much, in solitude, you with you. Multiplication of hope starts by taking a seat. Amen.